take the lead in the percentage of female characters, but look what happens when you have US-UK collaborations. It drops under 25%. And as you'll continue to see, the UK sample is very different than the US-UK sample. So it begs the question, is this due to the fact that when US studio money comes in, females get pushed out? Or is it because the genre is driving these findings? 7 of the 10 most popular US-UK collaborations happen to be action stories. And as some of our previous research has showed, genre is related to the portrayal of females on screen. Also very interesting is Korea and China, with the highest percentage of female leads and co-leads. So we also examine what happens behind the camera. So out of almost 1,500 filmmakers working behind the camera as directors, writers, and producers, only 20.5% were women, which is about a ratio of 4 to 1. And what we have found in the US, it's about a ratio of 5 to 1. So it's similar. So if you look at the first column in terms of directors, once again, UK independent films clock in at 27.3% of all the directors being women. China, 16.7% of the directors were women. But last year, only 2 women directed films across the top 100 US movies. A couple of territories, 0. France, Russia, the US, Japan, and Korea. So moving on to writers, once again, UK independent sample clocks in at 59% female screenwriters, followed by Australia, 33%, and Brazil at about 30.8%. France and US-UK collaborations bringing up the rear. So what happens when women are in the driver's seat? Here's what we found. When you have a female writer attached, the percentage of female characters on screen jumps up by 7.5%. And when it's a director, it's about 6.8%. And what we have found in the US, it's very similar in that it's been a 10% increase in on-screen roles. Now, there's a few ways to look at these findings. Storytellers tell stories that are authentic to them. So that's one point. Or are women only being given the opportunity to write and direct films with more female characters? This is more problematic and reveals that there could be a restriction in the range of writing and direction opportunities given to female filmmakers. This will also be discussed further in our panels. So when asked about changes in how women and girls are being depicted, Paul, a father of 2, said, even the traditional princesses have changed because when they escape, they have a bite to them after all. British word bite. And Jeff, who's 35, says, women we see in movies today seem to have a lot more fight and drive than we have seen in the past. They're more believable, they're more independent, and they're striving to do better. And Saskia, a mother of 1, said the Frozen storyline is very empowering being a female, whereas in other Disney films, it's like she must get rescued. Frozen tells them they can do things for themselves instead of having to rely on the opposite sex to save them. So we also look at physical attributes of the characters. And clearly, girls and women are simply valued less on screen than men and boys. U.S. research has revealed that exposure to sexualized content can contribute or reinforce body shame, appearance anxiety, and the internalization of this thin ideal for females. Similar findings have been documented in the UK, Germany, and Australia, China, and Japan. Because of these findings, we wanted to measure the attributes of the sexualization of the characters. And here's what we found. Females were 2 times as likely to be shown in sexually revealing clothing with some nudity, and five times as likely to be shown or referenced as physically beautiful. No one country is consistently above or below this gold global norm. So we came to the conclusion that no matter the territory, female characters cannot escape the emphasis on physical appearance. However, if we were to just look at the first two indicators, sexually revealing clothing and nudity, two countries under index, Korea and China. So Bonnie, a mom of five, says, I've never seen a fat princess. So what we also looked at is the relationship between age and sexualization. And there are many countries, most countries around the world, that are concerned with the hypersexualization of young females in mass media. So we took all of the female characters between 13 and 39, and we grouped them in three distinct categories. 13 to 20-year-olds are teens, 21 to 39-year-olds are adult women, and then the 40 to 64-year-olds are middle-aged women. Here's what we found. Female teens are just as likely to be sexualized as adult females. They're just as likely to be shown in sexually revealing attire, just as likely to be shown with some nudity. But they're more likely to be very thin. We're not going to focus on the older demographic. So cinema turns a leering lens on females. There's really no difference in the sexualization of characters that are women and between the ages of 13 and 39. Now, in addition to sexualization, we also looked at the world of work. Media is a window into the world of occupation. And studies show that media can contribute to occupational knowledge as well as gender stereotypical attitudes and beliefs about work. Because of this, we measured whether characters were shown with a job. Now, jobs were determined by scrutinizing verbal, textual, and also nonverbal information about a character's life. We had about 3,306 characters that were shown with a job. And you can see only 22.5% were working. So if you look at the first column, you'll see the percentage of fictional female characters in the workforce. And our top performers, no surprise, UK independent films, which are the highest, as well as China, in terms of percentage of females in the fictional workplace. India is our underperformer. In the next column, we see the percentage of females in the real world, actual data from the World Bank. In the third column, you see the difference. So the last column actually revealed that India is representing the most realistic portrayal of females in the workforce, and France the least. So showing the workforce findings is important, but it doesn't reveal the types of jobs that characters possess as well. We wanted to look at whether that character had clout, whether they were an executive, and so by capturing these indicators and putting them together, we're able to create hierarchy within industries. So Simon says, women are more realistic in British films these days, but men still hold the powerful roles. So let's take a look. If you look at the column on the left, you'll see that female characters hold only 4% of the C-level positions. So that means CEO, CTO, COO. Whereas in the real world, women hold around 25% of those positions. If you look at the column on the right, and Gina had mentioned this earlier, there are about 127 politicians coded at the highest level of clout. 12, or 9.5%. 12 is a small number, but when we really got into the data, it's 3. So who are these 3? The first played the fictional equivalent of Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany. But the only way we knew this was because she was named by another character. So now we're down to 2. The second played the president of a concerned group of citizens, and for some kids, was sure she made a great role model, particularly kids under the age of 7, who haven't mastered